back in 2020, I thought it'd be a phenomenal idea to start this side hustle called real estate investing. I was going to fix and flip properties, and I was going to become the next real estate tycoon. 4 years later, 100+ properties, I'm going to share with you the good, the bad, and the ugly of what I've experienced. Are you ready? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children 18+, you are tuned in to T-Lop with me, Dustin Owen, and my main man,
JC,
John Coleman.
Yo, what's poppin'?
Woo-wee. Right now, I'm mad at the world, including Apple, more specifically, their Beats headphones.
Oh yeah, I just bought me a pair and the left one refuses to charge. Leave a comment below if that's happened to you with a brand new brand new pair of Beats headphones.
Seriously? Mm-hmm. You just bought some?
Yeah, like less than like 3 months ago.
Like I'm talking about the kind that goes behind your
curl
ear.
Curl your ear, yeah.
Yes.
I think they discontinued those because they kept fucking up.
Well, so I purchased my first pair 3 years ago. Uh-huh. And then last year I bought a new pair. And I bought a new pair because my first pair wasn't working. I was like, you know what? They're 2 years old. Maybe that's the shelf life. Yeah, no. But you spend like $200 on these headphones.
Out of the packaging. Shit don't work.
Yeah. And they're sold like the ones you and I bought. They have the little earpiece.
They're
for sport. Yeah. It says on there for sport. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mine started effing up right away. Like the second pair, not the first pair. Mm-hmm. First pair I got rid of because I thought, maybe second pair right away. Same thing. They're not pairing. They will stay paired when they're in their charging station. They run out of batteries.
But it's always one of them, though. It's not both. If it was both, it'd be like, okay, but one just seems to fit.
I've had this issue for a year now. So look, I finally took mine to the Apple store. The Apple store then shipped them off for repair. You know what they told me? Can't repair them due to liquid damage. You must have spilled something. I said, I spilled something? I wore them when I worked out, and I sweat when I work out. I bought these because you market them as being for sport.
Class action lawsuit incoming.
Yes, it's my fault. And you know, so then to make it worse, they're like, well, we can fix them for $199.
But if you fix them, are they just going to get messed up again because of the sweat?
How about this? Do you know what they cost brand new on their website?
$149.
Like, what do you mean? You want me to send you?
Hey, America.
Wow. And for that reason, I'm selling half my Apple stock tonight. Like, I mean, seriously. So, yeah, buyer beware. Beats.
So, I can't put earbuds in because they always fall out. I got, like, weird. I guess I have good-looking ears, but they just never stay.
You have the ears of a serial killer.
Maybe it's because they're oily or greasy. I don't know. But anyway, I have the fancy AirPods. I have AirPods. They always slip out. I got the AirPods Pro with, like, the different rubber grips still fall out. So, like, my AirPods are just strictly for me at bars when I want to drown out the world.
That was my issue with AirPods too, is for as much running and cycling that I do, I just felt like at any moment they're going to fall out and then they're going to get run over by a car or another cyclist.
They're going to fall out at the airport, which happened on the airplane, and they fall in the crevice with a bunch of fucking old goldfish and hair clumps. And I'm like, damn it.
Yeah. So I specifically bought the Sport.
So they curl.
Yeah. Beats is a good brand, supposedly.
Allegedly.
They have the Sport and they have the little, like, I call it the grandma. Like hearing aid hook. Yeah. Like I'm a grandma. And because now hearing aids are like tiny, right? You can hardly tell. But when our grandma, do you remember big plastic?
Yeah, but now you can get cochlear implants. I hope I pronounced that right.
You did. But that's typically for someone who is legally deaf. Whereas I think hearing aids are more for people who, due to either damage or old age, their hearing has become a little bit suspect.
Didn't have to correct me, wife. Could have just let me run with the joke.
All right, run with the joke there, cochlear. Run with the joke.
Thank you.
All right, these people are like, y'all, quit bullshit and get into the topic. Yeah, I teach them with the topic up front. We're going to talk about what I've learned over the past 4 years of being a real estate investor. Okay, because in 2020, like I said in the intro, I thought, man, this is going to be a great idea. I've always wanted to do this. I follow people who do it. I have friends who do it. I once had a guy who ran a branch for the same mortgage company that I work at. And this dude was making more money in real estate development, real estate investing than he was in mortgages. That I was like, damn, one day I'm going to do this. So I'm a man of action. If I say I'm going to do something 9 times out of 10, it means I'm going to do it.
That is true.
So I did it. And here we are 4 years later. We're still doing it. And I have some lessons that there are some people tuning in that they are going to want to hear about those lessons. Or there's some people who are tuning in that I'm letting you know you need this information. You need to know reality versus fantasy. You need to know what you're getting yourself into. And hopefully I can help shorten your learning curve. I can help you avoid some of the mistakes that we have made and also help you understand the industry in totality. And I don't need more than 15 or 20 minutes to do so. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Rocking and rolling? Yeah?
Not if you got to like shout out some people, because that's just going to take up half the episode.
It won't take up half the episode. But I did tell our friends over at the Florida Association of Mortgage Professionals that, hey, if I'm going to be at a venue and I'm going to be one of the featured speakers, I think it's only polite, John, that we introduce the audience to that event. So I'm going to be in Fort Myers, Florida on April 9th. It's a Tuesday. This event is specifically for mortgage sales professionals. It's called FAMP on the Run. Go to TLOPonline.com. That's our website, TLOPonline.com. And if you look down towards the bottom of the homepage, you're going to see all of our upcoming and featured events. I'm going to be in Fort Myers next month.
Turn it for
just a like you and I are going to be in Phoenix next month for a Housing Wires event called The Gathering. Mm-hmm. If you want more information on The Gathering and you are a real estate or a mortgage professional, go to TLOP Online and you can check out details of that event. And you and I are going to be in Vegas throwing down in June with hundreds of other mortgage professionals. One of the biggest events of the year, Mortgage Mastermind 2024.
Mm-hmm.
We are going, actually, it's not called Mortgage Mastermind. It's called Mastermind Summit. I always call it Mortgage Mastermind because it's a mortgage industry event, but it's Mastermind Summit 2024. It is one of the biggest mortgage conferences of the year. It's specifically for loan originators and sales professionals. We're going to be out there as TLOP. We're going to be out there podcasting. We're going to be out there because I'm going to be keynoting one of the mornings.
Well, low key, that's awesome.
So cool shit. And then, you know, this episode's for our real estate investor friends, but if you're a mortgage sales professional and you're tuned in, just a reminder, please make sure that you've signed up for our newsletter. Please make sure you're looking our way for all of your training and coaching needs. And then if you are looking for a really cool private Facebook group to join, we just launched one. It's called Mortgage Mafia. On that note, John, let me walk you through. The year was 2020.
Ooh.
Pre-COVID, by the way.
Okay.
And I get with two buddies. I'm like, hey, look, I've always wanted to have a real estate investment company. Like, I look at real estate for what it is. It's the number one way for most of us to generate the most amount of wealth. When you look at that, the richest of the rich, they typically have a lot of real estate holdings. Okay. So I'm like, I want a piece of that. And I also learned a valuable lesson in life that I am a part of a very successful company, but I don't have any equity. And that still today pisses me off. Like, I don't have equity. I don't have stock options. There's no long-term incentive plan. Do you know my employer has never given me one dime towards my retirement?
What?
Not a dime. No, that's not my setup with my employer, right? So my setup's a little bit differently, and I'm entrepreneurial with them, and I have access to a P&L. So my branch in my region contributes to my 401k, just like we contribute to the 401ks of our associates. But the parent company, right? Like my quote unquote partner in that mess, they've given me no equity. They've given me no stock options and they don't contribute anything towards my retirement. So on that note, there came a time in my life, I was like, look, I want more. And I would love to be able to be a part of a company that owned 100, 200, or 300 various assets, single family homes, townhomes, condos, multifamily, maybe even small apartment complexes, at which point we rented them and the rents cash flowed and the property values went up in value. So when I fast forward 10 or 15 years from now and I'm ready to exit the work world, there's a dollar amount that's going to be a golden parachute for your boy DO, right? Like, that was the thought. And also, I like making money, and there's a way to make money fixing and flipping property. So what I've learned, this shit ain't easy. That's what I'd start with. This shit ain't easy. And if it was easy, everyone would do it.
Everyone is doing it. I see it all the time, or used to see it all the time on TLC and like those family stations and shit.
Yeah. Okay. If you think it's anything like what you see on TV,
A&E,
you are a bigger fool than I thought. Right? I mean, that's like watching True story. That is like watching some kind of a romantic comedy and thinking that's real life. That's like watching Transformers and thinking that you could really do that shit. Like as if you're Matt Damon and Jason Bourne and you could kill somebody with like your pinky and your big toe. Like, come on, man. It's fantasy. You watch TLC and Discovery Channel. Like they're showing you very surface level clips. They don't get into the nitty gritty. I'm trying to spend 15 minutes right now get into the nitty gritty. And I'm going to let the people know looking right at the camera. First and foremost, this shit ain't easy. And if it were easy, everyone would do it. Now, is it a great business? Sure, it's a great business. Right? Like there's various great businesses out there. Being a mortgage loan originator, great business. Being a financial advisor, great business. Owning a training and development company, great business. But that shit ain't easy either. It takes time. It takes resources. It takes know-how. And when I say know-how, like you know how to do something. Mm. And I mean, we're 4 years into it and we're still learning every single day. We're 4 years into it and things consistently don't go our way. We're 4 years into it and we're consistently pivoting. Now, are we purchasing more homes every month than we did the previous month? Sure. Are we selling more homes? Sure. Are we starting to accumulate more assets? And by assets, I mean more real estate property for holding? Yes. Like all of that is a resounding yes. However, it still isn't easy. There are definitely days when we feel like we don't have enough money. There's definitely days where we feel like, oh my gosh, if we don't get these two properties moved in the next 60 days, we're gonna have to figure out something. And whatever figure out means, it's not a fun decision to have to make. Mm-hmm. And I have learned most these two things. You can never have enough money and you can never have enough contractors.
I have a personal question for you.
Yes.
Now that knowing what you know now, would it be easier if you just went at it alone?
No, not for me.
Could you do people do this alone?
Yes, but if you do it alone, it's a full-time job. Mm. See, like I wasn't willing to back down from helping run a mortgage company. Mm. I wasn't willing to back down from leaning into TLOP and really growing it the way that we plan on doing this year and all of next year. And I wasn't willing to not want to continue to coach and train mortgage sales professionals.
Gotcha.
So because of that, no. Now, could someone? Yes. But it's like, where do you start? How much money do you have? Like where we started, we bought a franchise. We bought a franchise. I don't know if it was worth the money. True story. But I can't tell you that we're worse because of it. We spent a lot of money on that franchise, but that franchise gave us knowledge. That franchise introduced us to people who are already doing it at a high level. That meant it expanded our network, right? So by expanding our network, then we automatically had an opportunity to expand our net worth because those people were able to introduce us to thoughts, ideas, and best practices that we otherwise wouldn't have had access to. Mm. Other people may have to pay for a coach, but it's like it costs money. It costs money. Could you theoretically get started as a real estate investor with just $500? Theoretically, you could, right? But if you had $5,000, that would be better. If you had $50,000, that would be better. And then you have to have know-how, right? So you're not just going to come out of the gates and be like, oh my gosh, it's so easy. I'm going to get these three contracts. I'm going to make $20,000 on each of them, and I'm making $60,000 a month by month three.
That's what the infomercial told me. Are you telling me they lied to me?
No, it just doesn't work that way. So the first thing that I shared is this shit's hard. The second thing is you can never have enough money. And the third thing is you never have enough contractors. Okay, so what do I mean by you can never have enough money? Is that it takes money to make money. And OPM, other people's money, is key to a multitude of businesses, especially real estate investing. So when I go to purchase a property, even if I can find a hard money lender, that hard money lender may only lend me 95% of the purchase price. So if I'm buying a home for 200 grand, I still have to come up with the 5% down, which is 10 grand. There's still closing costs to purchase that home. That could be another 10 grand. I then have to rehab the home. That could be 50 grand. I then need to carry the cost, right? How long is it going to take me to rehab it? Because I have to keep the home insured. I have to pay for utilities. I have to pay for lawn care. So then I need to have carrying cost. So regardless of if you're using a hard money lender to help you purchase the asset, mm-hmm. you still need to have some kind of a seed money if you're fixing and flipping. And by the way, that's what, when I say you can never have enough money, that is what really good investors do. Really good investors have their institutional money. They have the, oh, I know this person's a hard money lender. I know this company has me approved, and they'll fund X percent of the project, but I need to go raise secondary funds. So maybe I can go to the bank, shout out Kiavi, and Kiavi is going to give me, they're one of the lenders that's pretty popular in the space.
Okay.
Okay. I can go to Kiavi and they're going to give me 150,000 of the 200 grand I need. Cool. Maybe I can go to my dad and he'll give me the extra 50 grand. So my dad wrote a second mortgage. Kiavi wrote a first mortgage because for me, cash is king. I need as much cash in my kitty so that I can deploy it for marketing, for sales. I don't want that money deployed into a project because then it's dead money. So what I learned is you can never have enough money. So yes, it's great that I could have two or three lenders that I'm approved with, and those lenders will help me purchase these homes. But all of a sudden, if I started with 100 grand and I purchased two homes and I was trying to fix and flip both homes, that 100 grand that I had is going to be tied up in those homes in a matter of weeks, at which point now I can't operate. At which point there's going to be interest payments and utility payments and lawn care payments that I have to be able to service, and I don't have enough money saved. So what I learned is you can never have enough money.
Interesting. I have another side question, not to go down a rabbit hole, but how important is marketing?
Extremely important. Think about this, John. We teach this to financial advisors, realtors, as well as loan originators, mortgage loan originators. He or she who controls the lead controls the purse strings. So it's your job to get a lead. So if you cannot go out and market, how do people know that you exist? How are you going to find the properties? In fact, rule number one that was taught to me in real estate investing, I learned this in 2020. So I did not know this rule until I launched or helped launch my real estate investment company. You make your money when you buy the home. Think about that one. You make your money when you buy the home, not when you sell it. You have to learn how to buy the home right. So then I'm going to ask you this. How do you find a home that you can buy right? You're not going to find that home in the MLS. If that home is listed for sale online, that is not a home that you're going to be fixing and flipping. That is not a home that you're going to be wholesaling or wholetailing. That is not a home that you're going to be able to put under contract and then assign that contract to another investor, which, by the way, I mention all that because, not for today's episode, but we will talk about this in future episodes. Mm-hmm. There's a multitude of ways to make money in real estate. It's not all about fixing and flipping. It's not all about buying and holding that property. Those are the two probably most common. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. I'm going to buy a rental property. I'm going to rent it out. And then after 10, 15, 20 years, someone else has paid my mortgage and the home is appreciated. Now I have this asset worth X and it's spitting out Y as a monthly return based on the rents I receive. Okay, that's buy and hold strategy. Fix and flipping, I bought the home, I fixed it up, I'm reselling it now for a profit. By the way, fix and flipping, the most cash intensive and the riskiest form of investing in real estate. Learn that the hard way, y'all. That is a, hey, 4 years into this, I don't know if I want to fix and flip business. I'm not afraid to fix and flip, but I don't know if I want to primarily fix and flip homes. Because that's where, I mean, we started, let's say, with 250 grand or 500 grand, and all of a sudden, you think that's a lot of money until you go out and buy seven homes, and all seven homes are in some stage of being rebuilt or being renovated, and you're like, damn, I'm out of money. Like, what do you mean you're out of money? You had 250 grand or 500 grand. I'm like, well, there's seven properties, and each property required a down payment, closing cost. It requires X amount for carrying cost and a rehab budget. And even if the lender that I did my loan with is going to give me what are called repair draws, I still have to front the money to the contractors and then submit for my repair draw. I just promise you, you can never have enough cash. So not only can you fix and flip, you can assign the contract. That's where I go out and find the home. But back to your marketing conversation, how do you find the home? You got to spend some money on marketing. But I go out and find the home. I negotiate with the seller to buy their house for X dollars. Then I realize, you know what? I really don't want to close on this home. Like, maybe all my money's tied up in the seven other properties. But I know John Coleman down the road. He's a buddy of mine. He's also a real estate investor. I can go to John and say, hey, John, I have 123 Main Street locked up for 150 grand. Hey, I'll assign you that contract for a $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 assignment fee. Hmm. So John ends up looking at it. He underwrites it. He's like, yeah, dude, I know you're into it for $150, but I would have been willing to spend $175 on it. So I assigned the contract to John for $175. Here's what happens. The seller still gets their $150 because that's what I negotiated with the seller to buy it for. John buys it for $175. I pick up the difference. That's called contract assignment. Oh, okay. That's a quick, easy way to make some money. Not for the faint of heart, because how many John Colemans do you know? Oh, you have to have a list of other investors, and then you have to be able to negotiate with those investors, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's like jumping in shark-infested waters. Okay. First, you have to figure out where the sharks are. They have to be willing to jump in with them. They have to be willing to negotiate with them. Mm-hmm. Another thing you can do is you can wholetail or wholesale. That's where I'm going to buy it. Then I'm going to maybe clean it out, but I'm not going to fix anything. Just clean it out, clean it up, mm. put it back on the market.
Mm.
And again, if I bought the home right, then I'll make money. So be like the very, very, very first lesson I learned, besides, oh, this is hard as shit, was you make your money when you buy it. Then I've realized, oh my gosh, this is hard as shit. Then I've learned you can never, ever, 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 ever have enough money. I don't care if it's your own money, which I don't recommend. Been there, done that. Like, that's a mistake that we've done. We've used too much of our own money and not enough of other people's money. We learned how to use institutional money, and then we learned how to piggyback that with private money. Let's say private money. Like, I've gone to some of our friends. And I'm like, yo, Murph, I'll give you 12% if you'll lend me $50,000 and I'll tie that 50 grand to this property. So now you have collateral. Murph's like, dude, I'm not making 12%. In my money market account, I got 50 grand sitting on the sidelines. I'd love to give it to you. So Murph and I go into a mortgage together. He gives the $50,000 because that then gives me more operating capital, because I'm all about scalability and scaling. I want to buy 100 homes a year. I'm not looking to buy a home a quarter, right? I'm not looking to, like, if you are, by the way, it's a great business for like husband and wife. And maybe they want to fix and flip 6 homes a year, and they can make 180 to 240 grand. Maybe every other year they retain one of those properties. So after 20 years, they own 10 rentals, mm-hmm. plus they made 240 grand a year. Like, it is a good business. But I'm going to tell you, it's probably going to take you 2 years. It's going to take you 2 years before you've really figured it out, unless you're working in some kind of environment where things are kind of bubblicious, or you're that type of person that you can fall flat on your face mm-hmm. and wake and get up looking prettier than you were before you fell. Mm-hmm. You know, those type of people, like, they're outliers, but they do exist. But for most of us, minimum of 2 years to figure it out. You're going to need a coach. You're going to need a mentor. You're going to need money. You can't ever have too much money. You need access to money. You need friends with money. Like, you need money, and you need contractors. The number of horror stories I can tell you, John, and we don't have time for it. Just trust me when I say this, you cannot have enough tradesmen and women, plumbers, electricians, handymen, general contractors, drywallers, painters, yard people, demo people. Like, you can't have enough, because something inevitably will happen. We've had contractor take our $10,000 and refuse to come back to the on the job site and literally said, sue me, I dare you. You know, we've had people that promised to show up for 2 solid weeks and just refused and just quit showing up.
I'm on my way.
We've had someone go in the hospital for 3 weeks. We've had someone go in the hospital for 5 days. I mean, it's crazy. Then we have some of the good people that, if I can't keep them busy enough, then they go and take other jobs. At which point, I finally purchased a property that maybe it was, I don't know, being held up due to probate issues.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I want to start the project. Like, oh, I'm sorry, your probate issues delayed me starting on the rehab. I had to go take another job because I can't afford to lose my crew. And if that guy or girl isn't keeping his crew busy and his crew paid, he'll lose them. So he took other work. So now this job I thought was going to start in March is not going to start in May unless I can go get another contractor to jump in. But if you don't have enough contractors, then you're SOL. Now I bought this property. I'm paying interest on it. I'm paying utilities. I'm paying insurance. Yeah. And we're doing nothing with it. So now it's just sitting and costing me money. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
So when I say you can't have enough money, you can't have enough contractors, you make your money when you buy the property. And this shit is hard. I'm speaking after 4 years of experience. And by the way, you could say success because we're still here. We still are, like, my group's spending $20,000, $30,000 a month in marketing right now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, we're generating $100,000, $200,000 a month in revenue. Yeah, like, we are quote-unquote doing it. And I'm going to tell you this, in full honesty and full disclosure, we're still figuring it out. We're still getting better. We still have systems and processes that need to be tweaked because it's a business, and if it was easy, everyone would do it. Anything else I'd want to share with the group? I think I've already laid it out there, like the importance of being a part of a community, of joining a club, of having a coach, of having mentors, learning from others. Mm-hmm. I don't want to discourage people from doing it. I said earlier, yes, you could get started with $500. How would I do that? One would ask. Like, you may say, hey,
how would I do that? I saw a late night infomercial at 3 a.m. after I ate a bowl of Chex Mix. How do I get it?
Yep. So here's the first thing I would do. I'd go join your local real estate investment chapter, like REI. Yep. I'd go, and then I'd make some contacts with people who actually knew what they were doing. That'd be the first thing. So maybe I'd spend $100 or $200 joining that institution, that organization. I then would get business cards and flyers made up, and I would go door knocking every single ugly home. When I say ugly, like dilapidated, rundown home, that and let them know that you work with some of the best real estate developers and investors in the market, and that if they're looking for a quick close and a cash offer, that you have the right type of buyer willing to buy their property. That's what I would do. It's a hustler's game. But if you only had $500, I maybe would invest in some of those ugly yellow signs. I'd go put them out on every intersection before the city.
HOA lady comes up before Karen comes out and takes down your marketing.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. The city ordinance compliance police
what
come
is,
by.
What is that? I heard that term you told me, like bird dogging. Isn't that some shit?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. You end up being a bird dog. Like, that is a great way to get started, is you tell another investor who has experience and know-how and contacts and accessibility to funds. You tell them, hey, look, if I bring you a property and you buy it, will you cut me in a piece of the action? So you could theoretically, logistically, you could go do that and bird dog one home a month and make yourself $5,000 a month, where all you're doing is you're putting that experienced real estate investor that you met at that networking function because you joined your local real estate investment club or community, and you had an agreement that you went out and bird dogged, you door knocked, you handed out flyers, handed out business cards, you hung ugly yellow signs, and for every home that they bought, they give you $5,000. You could do that until you started raising enough capital to where now you're experienced a little bit, because maybe that person also let you follow the transaction, let you kind of be an intern, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to see how they dispositioned it. You got to see how they negotiated it. You got to see how a transaction went. You could do that for 6 or 12 months, make yourself 50, 60, 70 grand, maybe save some of that. Now you may get to a point to where you find a property that you're willing to take down yourself. And now maybe make 30 grand on that property. It's like anything in life. We start on a tricycle. We then go to a regular bike with training wheels before mom and dad take the training wheels off. And sometimes, if you remember correctly, some kids, you only took one training wheel off. So there was an entire process. We start on a trike or tricycle, right, for little kids. We then move them up to a bike with training wheels. Then we take one training wheel off. Then we take the second training wheel off. The same exact thing would apply to a real estate investor just getting started. You're going to first start on a tricycle. You're then going to graduate up to a bike with training wheels. And that could be year one, year two, year three, year four. So I'm looking at my group. We may be finally, we're on that Huffy. We're on that
Huffy
mongoose.
Night, yeah, the 12-speed.
Yeah, we're on that mongoose.
Shit.
And we have the pegs in the back and the pegs in the front. Now, still doesn't mean that we're ready to like become BMX racers.
Still got your helmet on like a nerd.
Still have our helmet on like a nerd, like John Coleman says. Yeah. But if you ever wonder, like, that's what we learned. And if y'all have questions about structuring deals, or you're looking for partners in deals, and you're an aspiring real estate investor, or you're an experienced real estate investor, and you're looking to connect with others, I'd love to hear from you, because I'll put you in contact with my team. I promise you this, my team are a couple of bad asses that get after it, and their goals and their dreams are as big as you can think. They are the type of guys and girls that you're going to want to be around, and possibly even synergize with. So if you're interested, you can find me on LinkedIn. First name Dustin, last name is Owen. I'll be more than happy to connect you, even be more happy to answer some basic questions that you may have based on our experiences over the past 4 years of owning and operating a real estate investment and a real estate development company. But that's all the time we have for this particular episode. His name is John Coleman. My name is Dustin Owen. You've just tuned into TLOP. If you haven't done so already, make sure you go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Go to Spotify or Apple, give us a 5-star review, and share us not once, not twice, but 3 times with 3 people that you care about. And keep tuning in because you never know what else we're going to be talking about. That's all we have for you today. That's all the time we have for you today, folks. We look forward to catching you on the next episode.